Today's podcast is sponsored by Nature Box. What do you do when you want a snack and all you have is junk food? You have to rely on your self-control. Never a good idea. You'll end up eating all the junk food. You could start snacking healthy with Nature Box because Nature Box makes snacks that taste great and are actually better for you, created with high quality ingredients that are free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, so you can feel great about snacking. My personal favorites, I love the peanut butter pretzels from the Nature Box. I love the pistachio power clusters from Nature Box. All sorts of great tasting, healthier for you snacks are available. Nature Box has just made their service even better. You can order as much as you want with no minimum purchase required, and you can cancel anytime. Just go to naturebox.com, check out the snack catalog, over 100 snacks to choose from, and they're constantly adding delicious new snacks. Just choose the snacks you want, and they deliver them right to your door. With Nature Box, you'll never get bored. There's new snacks every month inspired by real customer feedback. And if you ever try a snack you don't like, Nature Box will replace it for free. So right now, save even more. Nature Box is offering RHAP fans 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/RHAP. That's naturebox.com/RHAP for your first order at naturebox.com/RHAP. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who is now dividing all of the podcasts into three sections about outwit, outplay, and outlast. Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and happy day after the finale day. We are ready to talk about everything from the Game Changers finale as the season is over. And here with us to talk about it, what a treat we have for you guys. Because we have a man who is so huge, they're even talking about him at the Survivor finale.
One thing, you've been writing a lot for The Hollywood Reporter.
Yes, I love to write. There was so much of this experience I wanted to share. There's a great team at The Hollywood Reporter. I want to give a shout out to Josh Wiggler. It's been incredible. I'm so thankful for the platform that they've given me.
Wow. We're so happy to have him here on this platform.
Josh Wiggler.
Yes.
Oh my God. I can feel the season 35 wiggle room theme already changing.
Yes.
Getting some upgrades in the near future.
And on top of that,
heartiest congratulations, gang.
Yes. Heartiest congratulations, Josh Wiggler. We got to be able to mix that up. We got to be able to
All
do
right,
that.
Well, let me see how fast I can do that.
Let's see. Yeah.
Heartiest congratulations, gang.
No. You got to work on your
It's hard to switch tabs between the seasons.
Your dexterity.
Josh Wiggler. Yeah.
Spinning grin.
Spinning grin. I was spinning and grinning last night. That was incredible. My head was spinning and I was grinning. That was a wild ride.
Yeah. And you were there on the red carpet among the Survivor glitterati, doing paparazzi.
Yes. Troy Zan was there. We had a great time. It was a blast. The crowd went wild.
They certainly did. All right, so let's set things up here at the top of this. This is the voicemail feedback look back here for Survivor Game Changers. This is the first time I'm actually getting to talk on a podcast about the season and about the finale. So we have a lot of stuff to cover. Heartiest congratulations to Sarah Lucina.
Heartiest congratulations.
Yeah.
Now, my question for you, Rob, is would you have voted for Sarah on the jury?
I think I can say
I would.
Yeah. Sorry, just a shameless setup for that.
Throw it to the soundboard. Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
No shame.
So congratulations to Sarah. Job well done there. I think we have a lot of things to talk through in terms of how the season played out. Ultimately, Sarah's game, Brad's decision at the final four, the new jury format. Of course, Brad's mustache.
That's very important.
But before we dig into any of that, I also had exit interviews with the final six this morning on Rob Has a Podcast.
How did that go?
I thought they went very well. I was on the red carpet last night. I was working for CBS.
Were the new Joey Amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's what people have said for quite some time.
Robbie Amazing in full force.
And so I was there doing interviews for CBS. CBS. Those are available on CBS All Access, and we'll see if they show up anywhere.
You were
else.
Looking sharp, by the way.
Thank you very much.
I really do want to just pay the compliment that I thought that you were.
Thank you.
You were dressed very, very, very handsomely, a very dapper Rob wow. Sesternino. It was impressive, Rob.
I don't think you've ever commented on my personal appearance before.
Not to your face. Yes, privately, many times.
Yes, well, thank you very much. I had a nice time last night at the show.
Yeah.
You were, of course, in the audience.
As always, I have not gone and reviewed the tape, but of course, I was doing my fist pumping action.
Yeah.
No one has let me know that they have seen it. So sadly, I just didn't register at the finale at all.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Usually people are good at spotting you.
Yes.
We got a lot of screen
time. I think
there was
one Josh Wigler Easter egg that may have been hard to miss.
Yeah. I think that the best place we were was at Cambodia, where we were sort of like up in like the second tank, but like we were sort of like in the background when they like did like shots like they were wide.
Yeah. Yeah. We're very awkwardly in like the Danny Dietz segment, just, you know, looking like idiots in the back.
We're on TV.
It's
on
kind TV. Of uncomfortable. Yeah. But I was there with a great friend of the podcast. Molly Shock was my guest to the finale. So maybe that's a good like beacon. Molly has awesome red hair. Perhaps you could spot me by the Molly hair.
Yeah, that's easy to spot out in the audience.
Yes.
Wild.
I had Molly at the finale.
So I was in the press trailer watching the show.
How was that? I've never done the press trailer before.
It's fine. I mean, there's sandwiches, there's water.
What kind of sandwiches?
Easy access to the bathroom. They just get like an assortment from Panera.
Ooh, Panera's not bad.
Yeah. So
bacon turkey Bravo.
Good. That's good. In the past, they have like a thing of coffee going also, which I like.
Steady drip.
That's good. Yeah, but I've only been to a December finale. I've never been to a May finale. That might be seasonal.
Yeah.
It gets cold at the December finales.
It got really cold at the Game Changers finale. The room in Radford, this is the greatest detail I can give you, was ice cold. It was freezing. Yeah. It was frigid.
That's a thing. They keep it cold in the TV studio.
Yeah, I don't know why.
So I was in the press trailer. Hannah Shapiro was out there. I was watching the finale with her. She was writing up some articles. I believe she writes
Mike.com.
Mike Bloom.com. No. MikeBarassi.com.
MikeyB.com.
Mikey B
was out last night.
I did see him.
Did you see Mikey B?
I saw him, that he was coming out when I was going in.
Yeah.
And so
he very quickly introduced himself as Mikey B to Zeke and then dipped. It was literally just like, Zeke, yeah. I want to introduce myself. I'm Mikey B. I'm out. And that was it. It was truly that short. And then he just turned. He spinned and grinned his way out the door.
He was out early.
Yeah.
Aaron Sebula was in the press trailer. Mikey
I love
the
Aaron.
Chimp.
Mikey was there.
Yes.
I saw Mikey there. That was great.
And then we just moved over onto the carpet.
Cool.
Yeah. And
did you prefer this to being in the room? Do you wish that you had been in the room now that you've done both? No pref.
It really comes down to the company I'm with. You know, it was fun when we were in the room together and we got to sort of like kibitz through the show. It was certainly fun last season when I was talking with Kim Spradlin the whole way through. But if I had the choice, like, to be on my own, I would prefer to be at the trailer than to be in the room.
I don't know. I feel like I've done it solo before, and I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. There are some great characters that are just in these live auditorium rooms. There's this row of small children behind me that were just ripping it up and having a great time.
There's always a lot of kids at the finale.
A lot of kids. It's a family show. It truly is. You know, that notion is really reinforced when you go to something like this. There's just, like, tons of youths everywhere.
Yeah. Okay. So, Josh, an exciting night, certainly. So let's start off by talking about Sarah's win. And I've got a take for you, and it's an early take.
Okay.
And I want to know how hot it is on the 7 pepper scale.
Okay. The 7 Culpepper scale.
Okay. On the 7 Culpepper scale. Josh, we have not done TEOS Volume 4, but the first three volumes are available at evolutionstrategy.com.
Indeed.
But in the Evolution Strategy, I do a winner ranking.
Yeah.
I believe when we put together Evolution Strategy Volume 4, Sarah Lacina and her performance in Survivor Game Changers, she will be a top 10 winner.
Wow. I don't think that that's super hot. I don't think that that's probably like a... It's like a four.
Four.
of four Culpeppers.
I think it's going to shock some people.
Yeah, no, I do. I think that's why I'm giving it four, because I'm trying to balance that out against my personal read and Josh on that. I think that that sounds right based on your criteria. Rob does his rankings based on dominant performances.
Agency, yeah.
How much you're controlling the vote. And in that regard, you have Tony pretty high up. And I think that really the bigger question for me is less about is Sarah a top 10 winner and more about how does her game rank against Tony's. That's going to be an interesting battle to have.
Yeah.
Because it's essentially the same exact style of play. It's the same, you know, flip from one place to another over and over again, lying fairly severely, you know, breaking really sacred vows and still managing to convert a jury to the win. Just one happens to be a lot more, no offense to Sarah, I mean, anyone next to Tony Vlachos is a lot less entertaining than Tony Vlachos. But who's the better player? Who's the, whose win is more impressive? I think that's going to be an interesting ocean to swim in.
Yeah. And I think that Tony, by the amount of time that went by after his season, I think his game was even more revered, because I think if we went back and listened to interviews from the summer of 2014 coming out of Survivor Cagayan, Tony would complain about how, you know, why didn't they show me? Why didn't the fans like me? Why didn't I get the edit like Kim Sprudlin?
Right.
Why did they show all my mistakes? And Tony was unhappy with his edit. And if you go back to the real time of the season, people wanted Spencer to win the game. They didn't. People weren't rooting for Tony. It was not like, I think that people sort of like remember back as like, oh, Tony, all the moves he made, everybody was cheering him on.
You kind of just think that he's like the gas in the car rather than like the person who's driving to victory. Like, he's the thing that's making this all possible and making it super compelling and entertaining. But you don't think that he's going to be the winner while you're watching it that first time.
And so I think that history is going to look back at Sarah Lucina's game, and I think that it's going to remember it fondly. I do think that more often than not, the audience sort of like has a little bit of time to digest it. Even go back to a year ago where it was Aubrey versus Michelle. I think in the moment there were it was a chorus of Aubrey should have won. Michelle was undeserving.
Civil
over
war.
Time, yeah. Over time.
Whose side are you on?
I really believe that a lot of people have come around to what Michelle was doing. Michelle played a great game. Michelle had a great social game. None of that was sort of like in the immediate aftermath of that season. And I think that people start to like process what happened over the course of the season. When they look back, they're going to look at how Sarah voted the right way every single time. You saw that where, you know, where in the comparison between her and Brad, Brad was saying like, hey, no more funny business. You know, Troy's in, they asked him at one of the tribals, like, you know, he said, like, I've been surprised so many times. You know, I don't know what's going to happen next. She was the one person, every single vote, she knew what was going on. I think that that's really big. She went back and forth so many times. Nobody ever was able to pin her down. And I think that
she was an MMA fighter at one point. So
I just think this particular performance, there's not a lot in the pre-merge. I don't know. Does she go to a tribal council in the pre-merge?
Yeah, she does for, you know, the Sandra and the Varner stuff.
Yeah. And she is like, other than speaking up at the Varner thing, she is like inconsequential in those tribal councils. And
Troy Zan getting real mad that you're forgetting the scene between Sarah and Troy Zan at Tavua.
She had almost nothing going on in the pre-merge.
She establishes that in that first episode, as we talked about in the last Wiggle Room. She says, I'm going to be the silent assassin. Like, you're not going to feel my presence until like I want it to be felt. That's even like justified in the storytelling, in the narrative.
Yeah. So she did a good job. Big brother-esque, just go to sleep for the first half of the game. She made good relationships, and then she was able to sort of capitalize on those relationships. And she went back and forth like a pinball, with credit to Will Wall. She was able to perfect the strategy that he so badly wanted to do. And I just think that we're going to look back at this and say, like, wow, how did she pull this off?
Yeah, I think it's a really impressive win, especially because we were talking recently about is this going to be a bitter jury if she gets to face it? You know, is this going to be a group of people that are going to feel really scorned by what she did? And certainly that was the case with a few of these people. Some of these people really did not respect the way that Sarah mm-hmm. played. But she had a lot of great cheerleaders on her side in that jury as well, in the brand new final tribal council format that I'm sure we'll get into a little bit of the nitty gritty on that. I loved it. But I think she had a few like really key advocates in her corner. Zeke is the guy who comes out and says, I'm going to be your champion tonight. And that's great. But I really feel like Michaela is underreported in how, you know, she was the person who got destroyed by the vote steal, which was right at her feet. And she's able to turn around and say, hats off to you, Sarah. That's pretty amazing that you did that. And I was, you know, my eyes were closed to that. So I loved all of that. I thought that that was great. Some insight from in the room. Sarah, you know, once we get to a certain point in the episode, you know, certainly when Sari and Aubrey are still active, there are a lot of people in the room who are really rooting for those two. And then they get knocked out at the top of the episode, and that sucks. From that point forward, really the only person that was producing any noise from the audience was Sarah. I think a lot of that having to do with the fact that it's a bad look for Brad Culpepper.
People were cheering for Sarah.
Yes.
Right.
It's a bad look for Brad when he's really going after Ty. That's really not going over well. The crowd is not going wild for Troyzan. Mm-hmm. You know, he's certainly not producing any like, ooh, like any kind of like, no, you know, like no one's.
What's that noise?
I don't know. It sounds bad. That's what the noise you make when you see the green monster.
Whoa. <yeah. laughs>
So Sarah was the only person who was, you know, producing a response from the audience of like, let's go, let's do this. You know, like she would give her answers at the final tribal that were really, really solid. And the room would, I would stop short of saying explode. Like the room did not like. The crowd never really went wild for any of the final three, I feel like. But she was the only person that like there was like a tangible group of people that really were pretty pumped up. And just about nothing that Brad was saying was landing. So in terms of the immediacy of the respect for Sarah, at least in the room, people were cheering for the right person, you know, they were, or at least they were cheering for the person who ultimately won.
Mm-hmm. So I want to explore here the flip side, and this is something that you and I have talked about, and this does have sort of a tie-in back to Kagyan.
Okay.
Where Tony, who ultimately ended up winning in that season, he was somebody who was brought to the final two when Wu won that final immunity.
Woo!
And he convinced Wu that it would be against the sort of, the loyalty and, you know, the honorable character that he's presented.
The ninja stealth code.
Right. It would be against his moral code.
Yes.
To take Cass to the end, that he said, look, but Cass, she's playing a bad game, but she's playing the game. So people will say that if you took her to the end, then they'll give her that, like, she's not playing right. So he got brought to the end. Sarah, similarly, is able to be brought to the end and really to sort of take advantage of her bonds with Brad and Troy. They have this final three deal where they're like exchanging bracelets and rings around. And so
like braided necklaces.
Yeah.
What was with like the tunic that Brad was wearing? Not to like completely derail
the potato sack.
Yeah.
Yeah. I asked him about that this morning in the exit interviews, and he said it was cold.
That's it?
That was it.
Yeah, just not caring about the fashion at all, that final tribal fashion. You're not into it?
Yeah, Troyzan said, yeah, Brad's going to start selling them.
Yeah, I know that, I don't know. I was going to try and make a Brad got sacked joke because he was a football player.
Yeah,
I just didn't have like a great way of doing it, but I just wanted to let you know it was on my mind.
Yeah, and we had Brad ultimately take Sarah to the end. Jeff Probst explored this idea of what would it look like if Brad and Ty and Troyzan sat in the final three. And there certainly was that scenario where Brad goes on to win the game.
Yeah.
So isolating Brad's decision,
which we don't want to yada yada pass. Like we want to talk about that later.
Which thing?
The whole.
The
Ty buster. Now we know.
Yes. Yes. We can get into that.
Sure.
So Brad's decision, just in a vacuum, that I like to talk about when we talk about the worst decisions on any of these shows. If you go in one door, you win the game. You go in the other door, you lose the game. That's really my criteria. And that's why I say that Wu made the worst move. Although, you know, some people say maybe Cass would have won in that scenario. I hate to explore this because I could tell from last night that this is something that pains Brad to talk about. But do we need to include that decision that Brad made in this conversation?
I don't think that it could rival Wu's.
Right.
You know,
because that's so binary.
Right. Through that criteria, like Cass is just not going to win against Wu. This seemed like a closer vote based on, you know, just like the snap poll, right? Mm. You know, it seemed like it could be a 5-5.
And,
maybe it could be a 6-4.
As Brad was pointing out, you know, things have changed. See the show and stuff like that.
100%. So I could see it certainly being in the consideration, certainly with that criteria of when you're that close to the end and you make one choice and you lose because of it, you have to talk about it in that context. I don't know. I don't know how much we want to take at face value that poll.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's accurate, then yeah, that's not a great move. But I don't think that, you know, I think that Brad leaves this season regardless, even though he has a rocky final episode. He has improved his image a lot, not just in terms of like being a more likable, you know, survivor character, but I think also just has improved as a player. But I don't think that you're really accusing Brad of being like a wicked genius in the strategy department, even after all of this. Yeah. Like the impressive stuff about Brad is he joined the Five Timers Club, you know, and he was part of, you know, some good strategic moments throughout the season, but he really did beast mode his way to the top.
Right. And we don't mean by getting medically evacuated.
No.
I had a miscalculation going into this finale. I felt like that if Brad won all the immunities going down the stretch, I felt like that people would give that to him. I thought that he would have this Holloway-esque victory.
Yeah.
That was not the case.
What's interesting is instead he had an Aussie-like loss. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been thinking about this a little bit, that I feel like this is kind of like a shadow, a faint echo of Cook Islands 1. This is, I believe, Survivor Cook Islands 21 is what we're talking about here with Game Changers. But you have in one corner, you have three finalists, right? You've got one who's going to get no votes. Nobody respects the way this person played. Maybe this person is likable, but nobody really is feeling the way that they played. So that person's just out of it, and it's really going to come down to two people. One, who was the person that was driving the strategy of the season. And that was literally the language that was used. You know, only one person was driving this ship. And then the other person, who dominated this game physically? Who got here based on that physical prowess? And that's the Yule and Ozzy thing all over again.
Mm-hmm. I thought that the jury format where we got to see the champions of like I am going to be the advocate for Brad. I am going to be the advocate for Sarah. I thought it was really interesting because I felt like in Ozzy and in Zeke, I felt like that both people were the advocate for their proxy, for the person that supports the way their survivor worldview looks. So for Ozzy to stand up and say, you know, I am here because I am the champion of Brad. And again, he did that in response to what Zeke said. For Ozzy, it was almost like, I am here because a Brad win means the way I look at Survivor is correct.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if Brad not winning means that in my four times out here on Survivor, everything I've done is wrong.
Right. My style won't win.
My style is not the winning style of Survivor. Whereas Zeke looks at it, hey, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to look at this and look at all the chess pieces on the board and I'm going to see where the moves are that I can make. Sarah is his proxy. And Zeke, it feels like a Sarah win supports the way he views the survivor world. And so by Sarah ultimately winning the game, then I think then Zeke comes away from saying like, hey, I didn't win, but I had the right idea. The person who most resembled the way I looked at the game was the person who went on to win. So he can come away from his two seasons feeling like, you know, I had the right idea. Things just ended up going the wrong way.
Somebody who I think is a compelling figure in this mix as well is Aubrey. Aubrey serves her first tour of duty as a jury member through this episode. And she was talking to me on the red carpet. I asked her, you know, certainly she was part of a controversial final tribal council. Mm-hmm. She really felt like she could have benefited from this format.
Yeah.
Like she felt like that this would play to her strengths because there could be more back and forth. Maybe she could, you know, do a little bit more myth busting instead of just like having to be, you know, you can no longer address the point that was just made. But beyond all of that, and she's not even saying like, I would definitely have won because of it. She's like, I think it would have been helpful. But I think that she was talking about how she took the responsibility of being a juror very, very seriously. And there were lots of conversations at Ponderosa where, like, you know, maybe conversations would take a turn towards like the bitterness, you know, like feeling really, really scorned by what Sarah did. And Aubrey said that she would talk a lot about, do you want a winner that's going to invalidate your game or do you want a winner that's going to validate your game? And I think that that was very front of mind. It must have been for a lot of these people. And I do think you see, you know, certainly the way that Ozzy and Debbie play, Brad is more reflective of that. And so they're going to be very passionate about that guy. I don't know. I mean, Sierra and Brad were certainly close, and Sierra has every reason in the world not to be thrilled with Sarah Lucina. No shade on the way that Sierra votes, but I don't know that I would say necessarily that it's, you know, Brad's style of play is necessarily Sierra's style of play. But certainly with Ozzy and Debbie, I think it makes a ton of sense that they were advocating for that guy. And everybody else who voted for Sarah, I think that that really aligns with the way that they view the game for the most part. Maybe not Ty, but certainly like Sari and Andrea and Aubrey and Zeke. Like, I think that these are people, the things that they value about Survivor and the way that they want to play, the way that they would like to win, is not far away from the way that Sarah won.
Do you think, is this an isolated instance or is this something that's part of this new format? Should future Survivor players look at who are the people that view the Survivor world the same way I do? And if I have the choice in the pre-merge, eliminate the person who doesn't see things the same way that I do. Because if I'm standing there at the end, the person who views the game the same as me will award what I'm going to do in this game.
Well, I mean, I think that to some extent, that's always been a factor. Like, you know, you're trying to keep people in the game that are going to A, work with you, and B, once you get to that stage, once you start putting people on the jury, you're going to want them to turn around and vote for you. But I think maybe it'll be a little more front of mind as a consideration when you're going through the lists of reasons to vote somebody out. You know, I don't know if this is going to be the final tribal format forever moving forward. I would be very happy with that if that's the case. I thought it was awesome and I would love for them to just do it like this forever. You know, it's the one game change that I would really like them to stick to from this season.
And this was underhyped, I feel like.
Very much so. I'm surprised by that. I would have hyped this one up because I think that it really delivers. Maybe that's the thing, though. Maybe that's the secret. Once again,
low expectations
is the key to happiness. But it was so great. I thought it was so awesome. And I think it's a really fair way to do battle. Not like the old way was unfair, but I think that it's just to give everybody a shot to really, really say whatever is on their mind rather than putting so much pressure on you having one moment. You can have many moments, like if a new thought comes to mind. And I think it helps keep the jury more honest with each other. They've got, you know, more time to think and weigh in and confirm and validate their feelings on stuff. And I think it's also just better television. It's almost like the jury gets to play again. You know, like the jury is now actively part of the show again. Not that, you know, again, they've got like their isolated moments, but it's just not as active. I loved it. I was thrilled by it. I really hope that this is just the way of it moving
forward. Yeah, I really liked it a lot as well. I'm sure we're going to touch more on that in some of the voicemails because we have calls about that. Let's just set up the other headlines here. Sari goes out in the advantage getting.
It does happen.
It was sort of real. The worst case scenario that we were talking about. Did you see a lot of pushback from people? I know people were bummed out that Sari didn't win, but have you seen people be really frustrated with this, or did you feel like that the people you talked to appreciated the history of what happened?
Yeah, I mean, I actually have not been able to like really get into my social media since all of this has gone down.
I don't feel like I've seen a major backlash to this.
I don't know. I'm really kind of disconnected from what everyone's thinking right now. I can't wait to hop into those takes. Like, I'm behind on the podcast, my just behind on my timeline and everything. But I can tell you what it was like in the room, and it was painful, and it was really, really hard. I felt myself at like the edge of tears with that stuff. It sucks to see Sari go out that way. To have not, you know, gotten a single vote against her the entire game and go out that way. You know, it is like the Rock draw. Except usually with the Rock draw, it's not like the character of the season. It's people you like, certainly, but it's not like, it's not the decisive fan favorite. Suri going into this finale, if you're, you know, a Survivor super fan, I think for most people is at least top two, if not number one going into the finale, and to be unplugged from the finale so quickly in that way, it's hard. It's really difficult. That being said, I think Steven and Sophie on Know It Alls got into this a little bit about how like how hard it is to get Suri out of Survivor, like the ways that she has left. It's never been like a big majority thing. Like there is, you know, idol wonkiness involved in heroes versus villains. It's one person's decision in Micronesia. It's fire in Panama.
Yeah. And also the Micronesia thing was that she was expecting a final three.
Correct.
They all were. And like, actually final two.
So like every single one of Suri's Survivor demises have been very memorable.
Yeah.
So it adds to the legacy. I think it adds to the legend. And I think, you know, if you're really ride or die with Suri Fields and you are of the mind that Suri is the best to have never won, I think that this season really only bolsters that argument. You have no idea how things are going to shake out if she had survived that night. It's not impossible that she makes it to the final three. It's difficult. It's difficult and I'm not betting on it, but it's not impossible.
I think the thing that does make it easier to stomach is that I think she was mostly drawing dead, especially with the plan that they had where Sarah does have the legacy advantage, even if those idols do remain in everybody's pockets going into that tribal council.
Aubrey goes home.
Yeah. Assuming that, you know, the legacy advantage is still in play. Again, no legacy advantage. Sarah ends up going home at that tribal council, and maybe Suri and Aubrey and Ty are able to go to the finals. There's just as good of a chance Ty flips back to Brad and Troyzan also.
Sure.
Certainly, you know, anything is possible. I think the show handled everything with Suri going out extremely well. I thought that the moment where she's leaving the tribal council was great. Jeff really honored her there. And I thought it was a smart idea to bring her out and give her her moment pre-reunion show to get that sort of ovation. I'm sure it was probably the biggest pop of the night.
By far, not even close, except for Alex Kidwell when I got a shout-out.
When you got a shout-out, sure.
I
mean, the people were on their feet, right?
Yeah, no, it was awesome. It was really great. I mean, it was really emotionally necessary. I mean, if Suri could have, you know, and I actually, just even what I was about to say, like, it's a very meta thing. Like, if Suri could reach out from the other side of the TV screen and come into your living room and be like, it's okay, I'm okay, like everything's okay.
Yeah,
you need that like emotional hug in that moment. So I think to have that, I do think was great. The other piece of it too is, look, I think that there's a lot of critical things you can say about this season. You know, there's a long list. We won't be able to get into all of it, I'm sure. But I think one of the things is when a legend went down, I do think that the show really did a great job at saluting them as much as humanly possible.
Yeah.
Like the episode where Tony goes is just like such an epic showdown. And I think that they crafted that in a really compelling way. Sandra, I think up until this point is really the one, you know, that send off of for the first time ever. You know, that is a really, really touching scene as well. And now you get it again with Suri.
They got similar send offs.
Which is interesting because, you know, they're often thought of similarly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that, you know, there's a lot to be said about this season and some of the decisions that maybe didn't work out super great. But I think in a moment like this, moments like the Suri exit or the Sandra exit, that's when it really, I feel like Survivor's love for Survivor is worn on its sleeve. I think you can really tell how much the show cares about its own internal history in moments like that. Almost, you know, to a point where it can be a little bit bewildering for a new fan, like a true casual has not really gone through the stuff. It's like, why do you guys care about Suri so much?
Mm.
There's a real affection for the people that made this show possible and the people that have made this show endure for so long. So I really appreciate that as somebody who has been with the show since the beginning. You know, it really was very touching to see that moment for Suri. And I think it was, if anyone has ever earned anything like that from Survivor, it's certainly Suri Fields.
Yeah, she really got almost a lifetime achievement award last night.
Well earned.
Survivor.
Well earned.
I would worry about her a fifth time. I wonder if she's sneaking up on anybody this time.
You know what? We say that every time. Who knows?
But that she did have the benefit. And I said this in my exit interview with her this morning. I said, like, well, you know, I think you kind of served by you went out early in Heroes versus Villains. People weren't as scared of you this time around as they probably should have been. Kind of like they forget about you. Josh, this could be the right spot for me to go back.
I'm telling you, man, I actually think that you've got a shot.
The right spot for me to go back would have been like Survivor, like 22, 23. I think that, you know, the worm is...
maybe it's turned a little bit.
Yeah.
You're just trying to put that toothpaste back in the tube because you just got everybody's hopes up.
Yeah. All right, Josh, we have so many questions to get into from everybody, from all of the callers. And we'll touch on some of these topics that we've already set up here at the start of the show. Let's give you a question and talk a bit more about that final tribal council. Here's a question from Jennifer.
Hey, Rob, this is Jennifer from Indiana, and I just got finished watching this amazing speech by someone named Sue Hawk about rats and snakes. But yeah, anyway, based on this new format, is that speech even possible due to the structure going on? Thanks.
Okay, Josh, arguably, the greatest moment in Survivor history comes when Sue Hawk delivers the scathing monologue to Kelly Wigglesworth at that final tribal council. In effect, have we taken a possible moment like that away?
No, I don't think so. You know, there is something about like there's like a magnetic force to a moment like that because Sue is up there. This is Sue's time. Kelly and Richard are stuck in their seats and they just have to endure whatever's coming. And if this is the switch to a new final tribal format, you're not stuck in that gravitational pull with one person anymore. That being said, I think that the way that, you know, Survivor can be cut and the stories can be told and the way that this back and forth format works out is you're certainly going to have moments from both the contestants and the jury where somebody is going to say something just like completely, you know, mesmerizing. You know, somebody is going to say something that you're just going to be transfixed by. And I think that you still have an opportunity for those types of scenes, don't you?
Yeah, I think that this is fine. I don't think that there is another
no one's like
Sue Hawk
standing up
speech.
You know, no one's standing up and you're not getting that shot and you're going to get like a little bit of Ozzy's shoulder in your Zeke speech. You know, you're going to get stuff like that. But otherwise, I think that like the content of those kinds of line deliveries, that's not going to go away, I don't think.
If this is the Survivor San Juan del Sur Final Three and Reed starts to go into, you know, they say in fairy tales and like I think that probably that gets shut down quicker. And I think that's fine.
The script is out, you know, and that's the thing about Final Tribal. My biggest concern is it's going to be hard for you and I to act out once we get back into the evolution of strategy.
That'll be trickier. But there's Catherine Lucas has her work cut out for her.
There's a reason why we do that. And if you haven't listened to the evolution of strategy, one of the things that Rob and I do starting around, I think, the Guatemala discussion is every final tribal council will reenact essentially, and then we'll stop down and analyze everything that was said. But the reason that we can do that is because final tribal typically does read like a play, it plays like a play. It's you know, it's a person goes up, they have a monologue, they have a few questions, there's some dialogue exchange there. It can be a little stiff. This feels more, to use a word that Jeff Probst loves, alive. I feel like there is some electricity to this that has been lacking in the past. Let's go with it for a little while. I really hope that they go with it for a little while.
My biggest criticism of this final tribal council, and I loved it. I thought it was great, and I was really excited to see how it was going to play out. My comparison was that, and I know I'm going to lose you right now, is that it feels very much to me like in Big Brother when we get down to the final three and a Dr. Will or... And we've had in the Canadian version, Dan Gheesling shows up like, all right, tell me about these three players. They actually do it without the final three present. But I think it's a very interesting conversation where the jury sort of says, actually, you know what? I think that Brad was playing the best game. And I think that he was leading Sarah and Troy's in around the whole time. Like, what? How could you say that? It's always a fun moment in the season. And I just really like how they did this. And so kudos to them for coming up with this. The one thing I would change up.
Yeah.
My criticism of it is the idea of we're going to do this in three parts.
Right, sure. The outwit,
this is
outplay,
the outwit part. This is the outplay part. This is the outlast part. I just think that at no point could it, if you just took that part away and you gave me like different clips, I could not tell you which part we were talking about when. I thought all three parts had similar conversation. I just think that put the segments on it, I think that was just too much. Like, we have a free form conversation. Let's see where it goes. No need to do it by act break.
You know, they may they could change it from outwit, outplay, outlast. I mean, they could do hero, healer, hustle. You know, they could do something like that in the near future. But I think
one, it's just not necessary.
No, but I don't know. I think that there's an organizational property to it where Jeff can kind of rein things in and refocus the conversation a little bit. And if you've got like three distinct sections where Jeff can come back in and be like, all right, well, we've been talking a lot about this one type of thing. Let's start talking about a new type of thing. I think it gives a little more power to Jeff, which I think is a good thing. I think that, you know, Jeff is nothing if not an excellent moderator, though critics of some of the tribal councils from this season will disagree, given all the whispering that went along. But I think typically as a rule, I think Jeff is a really great moderator. So I think to lose that from the process, that seems to me to be a bad idea. So I don't know what the fix is for it. I don't think it's like a major fix that needs to be made anyway.
If we were going to keep the segments, I think just to call it like the social game, the strategic game, and the competitions.
But the branding, you know, branding hands.
But I just don't think that they were getting the branding consistently right.
Yeah. Like they got to massage the branding, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I just think like, and the outlast. Wait, what? That's what outlast.
A little hard to follow. A little hard to follow. There may be a better way to do that. I hear that, but I don't think I don't mind the act break. I don't mind giving Jeff a voice in this and just like letting him move things along a little bit more.
Okay. So in terms of Sarah's game, let's go to a question from Bob, who wants to highlight what he believes was the biggest moment of the game.
Hey, it's Popsicle Steel, reality_steel on Twitter. Just wanted to comment that the best move is obviously convincing Sierra to get her the legacy advantage, even after she voted her off. If she did not have that, Sarah goes home at the final six. She had three votes. It's just amazing. Brad lost it by not tightening his alliance with Sierra. I haven't heard anybody talk about that. Wanted to get it out. Thank you.
Okay. Josh, I think this is fascinating because we have talked for two seasons about how the legacy advantage is useless. The legacy advantage should not be in the game. Ultimately, the legacy advantage decided the winner of this season.
Yeah.
If it was not for Sarah pulling off the move to take the legacy advantage away from Sierra, either, you know, Sierra stays in the game, or if Sierra wills it to Brad, he has it at the final six. He's safe. Sarah is not. Unless, then, if Brad has the legacy advantage, then he gives his individual immunity to Sarah.
Which is exactly what Sarah said to me on the red carpet. Like, that's the scenario she sketched out. But, I mean, I had this realization after watching the thing, and I got the chance to talk to her. And, like, one of the first things that we got into is, like, was that your clutch move? Is that the biggest move that you made this season? Is that the most important thing? At the time, we were already, you know, heaping praise upon it because that was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. The acting that she was able to do there to really convince Sierra that she was with her and
the
to
eye
get
acting.
The eye acting, indeed, Antonio Mazzaro's favorite. So already it was a praiseworthy move just because, like, holy crap, you just conned the hell out of her. But it did save her life in the game. And Sarah knows that. And Sarah's like, if I had not pulled that off, I'm not here talking to you. Certainly not as the winner of this season. So in her mind, I would imagine that she views that as the biggest thing that she did in the whole game. And I would sign off on that. I think for like a single move to identify, that was by far and away. You can't know it at the time, but how clutch is it to get that thing?
So who had the better redemption arc this season? Sarah Lucina or the legacy advantage?
I'm not as down on the legacy advantage as you and Steven are. So you're talking to the wrong person. Like, I think the idea of having something in the game that we as the viewer know is going to go off at some point, I like that. I don't mind that. I think that, you know, it could be rehabbed, you know, like I think it could be worked on.
Yeah.
But as a concept, I don't mind it.
But to me, it only got interesting when Sierra made the mistake of telling somebody about it. So I've always said with the legacy advantage, if you want to make it compelling,
sure,
then people need to know it's out there. Now, maybe
when you say, though, that you always said that about the legacy advantage, you're talking about two seasons. You know, we're talking about two individual legacy advantages.
For the last year, I've been saying this about, since September, right.
You know, so in fairness, like, we haven't seen it a lot. And, you know, it's worked now 50% of the time. 50% of the time, it works every time, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what a wise man once said.
Right. Okay, so here is a question. Speaking of legacy advantages and all the advantages that we've had in a season like this, here is a question from Ryan from Queens wanting to know about what's going to happen moving forward.
Hi, Rob and Josh. This is Ryan from Queens. My question is, how does Idle Geddon affect the metagame forward? Will future players be so afraid of getting Cereed that everyone is idol hunting on day one? When they do find an idol, will they hang on to it as long as possible? Does that make Idol Geddon the ultimate game changer? Thanks.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting question to
explore.
Did you
catch that like little whiff of a meow?
Yeah, it was like a little bit of a cat.
A little bit of a mew. It was really cute. I liked that.
A little
bit
of a cat there. So I think that this is interesting because we talk so much about like, oh, what's production going to do with, you know, there's so many advantages and idols in play this season. But for future players, what's the takeaway here?
I think, you know, let's use Ty as an example for this. I think that you can talk about this in conjunction with David Wright. I think that, you know, it's so crazy that Ty had those two idols for so long. And I think, you know, we've talked a lot over this course of this season about how could you not have played that in some of these moments. I think that maybe Ty was more secure than we gave him credit for. And I think that maybe he was a little more plugged into the game than we gave him credit for. But I think that the idea of playing your idol and then you're probably, you stand a decent chance at getting it again. It's really a matter of timing. Like, I think when David did it in Millennials versus Gen X, when he played that so early and then he finds the idol the very next day, that's so rare. I feel like that feels inadvisable to do it quite that early on in the game. But maybe
he
not.
He said that was his best move.
Maybe not. You know, maybe it really does behoove you to, you know, play that idol at an early opportunity that is also an intelligent opportunity. Because the risk of doing it is, you know, now you're leaving yourself unprotected at some point in the future. You always want to be protected. And you've done that early. So now you're on people's radar as somebody who has a point on the resume. So that's a risk, a downside to calculate. But I think another thing to keep in mind is I believe Survivor really wants these idols to be found. And there's going to be fun, creative ways to find the idols. But if you keep your eyes open, and certainly if you find it once, you do have this incredible edge of how to find it again, mm-hmm. as evidenced by the way that Ty found idols this season. So I hope it doesn't make people cagier. I hope it doesn't make people, you know, really, really worried about what's going to happen at the final six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think that it's going to make people play tighter?
Are people going to take their idols and hoard them, or are they going to find their idols and play them, which we saw much more in Millennials versus Gen X? I do think that from a production standpoint, and you would probably know better than I would, I think, yes, Survivor wants the players to find the idols, but they also want them to play the idols. They, in the economy of idols,
right.
They don't want people like going home and, you know, hiding their money under a mattress.
Right.
They want people, okay, let's put
spend that money.
Right. Let's put that money in circulation. Let's keep printing more money and let's keep it going in circulation.
Pizza
keep the
parties,
Survivor economy moving.
Karaoke.
Yes. The
new
issue
car.
Is this season, people were finding idols and advantages and they weren't playing them. They were just saving them for a rainy day, which ultimately happened, unfortunately, for Suri.
Yeah.
This flood that was the end of the world.
Yeah, this Fijian standoff.
Right, at Advantage Geddon.
Yes.
For Suri. So I think that players who watch Millennials versus Gen X, I think that the takeaway was sort of like, hey, play your ass. I mean, we saw it in Kagyan as well, that there was, you know, idle play going on. Didn't always work out in Kagyan, actually. But I think that that had been sort of like the way Survivor was going. But this season, I think you had players that were a little more old school in their thinking for the most part, you know, hoarding their idols and taking them to the end, which ended up being less fun. So,
yeah, 100%. The good news is season 35 filmed without having seen Advantage get in. Mm-hmm. So it's at least not on the mind of the most recent season to film that is coming up in the fall. So hopefully that's a little bit more, for my money, hopefully that's a little bit more of the Millennials Gen X mentality.
But do you think, and this is like an idea that's been kicked around for a while, should there be some sort of an expiration date on these idols where you find an idol, you have three tribal councils to play it, or then it expires?
Hmm.
Or is that too contrived of a thing to throw out there? What happens to it? Is this a dead idol that you could use to trick people?
I wouldn't want that to happen at every single cycle.
Because in Big Brother, yeah. Okay, this is the other show that you don't care for.
I'm not bashing Big Brother anymore.
You know, are some things that are out there where it's like, okay,
above that.
You have a special power, but it needs to be used in the next 2 weeks, that you can use it now or you could use it next week. I think that that might be interesting for Survivor to look at something like this. Like, this is a pre-merge idol.
Hot potatoes.
Maybe like something like this. This is an idol that expires at the merge. You can't use it anymore after we get to the merge, forcing people to potentially get into using it earlier, as opposed to if there's only three or four idols in the game and they all get to final six. If this happens in more seasons, I think that that's not an ideal thing that Survivor wants. I mean,
yeah, I agree. I think it's an interesting idea to have some more artifacts in the game that are for the 3 days,
right?
Maybe for the 6 days, but
like Ty and Troy's in. We didn't have a hidden immunity idol that was found after the merge, right?
Not to my knowledge.
I mean,
no.
You had. I mean, in this scenario,
we had that, the vote steal. That was the thing,
right? We had all these idols that were found pre-merge, and then they all got saved for the final six.
Yeah.
And we also never got to see any of these tiebreak scenarios that we talked about. And
I think it scared people would be my bet.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you talked about an old school mentality to the gameplay. I think it maybe handcuffed people a little bit. The fear of what would happen if there's no deliberation after.
Do you feel like
first
that
vote.
Move was something that failed? Was it a failed experiment?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, people don't want to go to Rocks.
Right.
You know, I think that it was.
You need to have a really compelling reason to push to Rocks. Mm-hmm. And that's really only happened a couple of times. It's happened 3 times.
Yeah. So
that, to have that be like the automatic risk of you know, of a strategic vote, of a 3-2-1,
right.
Of anything.
So you feel like that maybe might have made people play tighter.
Yeah,
the fear
I do.
Of going to Rocks.
I do. That's a theory, but yeah, I would think so.
I mean, it never was addressed. Like, it was, and I'm surprised they made such a big deal of it in the premiere, considering that it never its face.
That would be a really big thing to leave out, because it's a real fundamental rule change. And I think that even if it never really comes into play during the season,
mm-hmm.
It would certainly come to light in our exit interviews, right? You know, like, it would start to come out. So why would you not front load that? So I understand why they...
I just thought it was really hyped at the beginning of the season also.
Well, it was also the only twist that we knew in the preseason. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got to work with what we got here, you know?
Okay. All right.
Sometimes we're the hype men ourselves.
Sometimes.
We just have to do what we got to do.
Okay. Josh, before we get to some more of these questions, let's thank one of our sponsors here today. New sponsor on the podcast.
Ooh, I like.
Okay. We are talking about Wag.
Wow. Josh Wagler.
Yes. Not Josh Wagler.
Josh Wiggler.
Got
Josh
it.
Wiggler.
Thank you for the correction, Zeke.
This is Josh Wiggler, and we are talking about Wag. Wag is the ultimate dog walking app.
Wow.
I've gotten a chance to try this out.
Wait, your phone, your app walks the dog for you?
With Wag, that of course, that, you know, so many dog lovers out there listening to RHAP. Sometimes we work long hours. We can't get a walk for our dog. We dream about maybe taking them to a dog bar sometime,
uh-huh.
but we can't get home to get a walk for our dog. They're all cooped up in the house. With Wag, you can order walks for your dog on regularly scheduled intervals.
So it's like an Uber for your dog.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Kind of, except that the dog walker comes. It's an on-demand app for getting a dog walker, especially if you have a busy schedule. You can book options that cover ASAP walks, schedule ones for later. You can get a schedule going. Wag sends you a detailed profile of your walker, including video and ratings. You get text messages, and you know that your dog is safe, and you know your home is safe as well. Wag is a must-have for every dog owner. Give Wag a try. Your life gets easier, and your dog will be happier and healthier from the extra care. Download Wag right now on iTunes or Google Play. Search for Wag Walking. That's W-A-G. Sign up today, and you get your first walk for free. No promo code needed. Give it a shot. Why wait? Make your life easier and your dog life's happier. Download Wag and sign up today.
I hope that this is a great app, and I hope that this remains a sponsor of the podcast into season 35, because the Wiggle Room needs to be sponsored by Wag.
Yes.
Like, it really just has to become the Waggle Room.
That would be great.
Did you know that I used to, when I was a summer camp counselor, Rob, we've discussed this at points in the past, I used to run an activity called Walking with Wiggler.
No, what did
you do?
So
it could have been Walking with Waggler.
Yeah, I mean, was it really just like as it sounds?
Yeah, you literally just walked around camp with me.
Was it a walk and talk?
Yeah, it was you know, philosophy hikes. You know, there
philosophy hikes.
It was like a philosophy hike. You know, we would talk, we would meditate about the world, we would muse about things. And a very, very stern rule, literally, because my co-architect of this was named Ben Stern, who was my best friend since I was 2 years old.
And he wasn't Howard Stern's dad?
No, he's not. He's gotten that before. He's a great guy. But his brother's name is Daniel Stern, which is kind of great. And it's not the actual Daniel Stern. Anyway, there was a rule in place where you could never stop walking. And even if you had to like go for like a water fountain break, your feet just had to constantly be in motion. You just always had to. And if I ever caught you doing it, you would have to sit in place for 10 seconds.
Why were people doing this? This is a camp and you were really, like their counselor?
Yeah, it was really fun.
And you're like a drill sergeant?
Yeah. And when you would get up, you couldn't run to catch up with the group because running was strictly forbidden in Walking with Wiggler.
Okay. I have so many questions, but we should probably just get back to the voicemail.
It's a good podcast activity, actually.
Yeah. What, walking?
Yeah, at the next, like, RapCon, we'll organize a Walking with Wiggler.
Yeah.
So it'll be sponsored by Wag. It'll be Walking with Waggler.
Yes, okay. So, Josh, let me play you this multiple choice question. This comes to us from Matt in New Jersey. Wants to know, which of these players do you think it's most likely that we're going to see again?
Hey, Rob and Josh, this is Matt from New Jersey. My question's about Sandra, Ceri, and Ozzy. Out of those three, who do you think we're most likely to see come back again, or a fourth or a fifth time? Thanks.
Okay.
I got my answer.
What do you got?
Sandra.
Sandra!
Yeah. Oh, that was tough to watch. You just struck out at the bell and you didn't get it on the first shot.
You weren't supposed to say anything.
We're also being videoed right now. So, I mean, eventually the footage will be...
You don't know. Couldn't have made the cut.
I saw it and I felt like I had... It was my journalistic responsibility to report the news on that one. It was tough. It was tough to behold. It's Sandra, of course, because Sandra will always say yes. Sandra has nothing to lose by going out there. Survivor loves Sandra. If they didn't always love her, they really love her now. I just think that she's going to be the most automatic yes of any of those three. I think I asked the question of Ceri. I'm sure you asked her as well, would you do round five? And she said, please don't ask me that right now. Give me like at least 3 months before you even ask the question. So she's really not even, you know, entertaining the idea at the moment. I think Ozzy would probably do it again. It's an interesting notion of, you know, watching Brad lose is okay. My style of Survivor isn't being rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think Sandra with a healthy lead on that multiple choice question.
Yeah, I think that you have a good point in terms of Sandra's desire to go back. Who has the bigger target? I think Ozzy's a distant third. I think that, you know, Ozzy was good, but I don't think production is dying to, you know, get him. I think we've sort of seen most of what we're going to get from Ozzy. Who do you think that production wants?
Besides, he's going to be busy running for office.
Yeah, Ozzy. Yeah, he's
President of the United States.
Ozzy for 2020.
Yes.
campaign poster.
Write that down. We're going to need a hashtag later.
All right. So in terms of the Sandra versus Ceri, who do you think has the bigger target on their back after the season?
Sandra. I think. But I don't know. It could go either way. It really depends on who they're out there with. And this is what I'll say in that regard is if Sandra and Ceri are ever brought back, they need to be surrounded with a cast full of equal threats. They need to be on a season where everybody has a threat level that is at least close to the circle of threat that Ceri and Sandra occupy. Mm-hmm. If it is really a huge disparity between the people who are of that reputation and then a lot of people who are not close to that reputation, not good. Not feeling that. So just want to be loud and clear about my feelings on that.
Josh, how excited are you for the potential all-winner season for the Cops R Us reunion?
It's going to be great. We talked about that a little bit, too. Like, you guys have to play. Sarah and Tony, you guys have to play. Cops R Us are back, is what we would call that.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah, I would be very excited about that.
Yeah. So, could they do something?
Because now, too, like, now the feud is going to be real. Because now the conversation is starting of who's the better player, Tony or Sarah, who's the better winner. And you know who that's not going to sit well with.
I have a blemish
on
my record.
Not going to enjoy
Sarah,
that.
She has a blemish on her record.
Yes.
Yeah. So what about a season? And I think that this is kind of where Game Changers started at one point of like winners versus like best non-winners. And I'm not like shamelessly trying to say like, hey, okay, this is my shot. Get me back.
Right.
But if you could have a season where you have 10 winners on one tribe and it's not like they're voting anybody out because they're a winner. And then on the other tribe, you have a tribe with Ceri and you know, pick out some other really great players and not like head scratchers. Like, how is this person?
No
one
head
of the
scratchers.
Best non-winners?
Save them for Head Scratcher Island.
Head Scratchers. Survivor Head Scratchers.
You know?
So like, why are they back? I don't know. That, you got me.
That was this is an exclusive from my visit to location this year. That was the fourth tribe that got scrapped from
Head Scratchers Heroes.
From Heroes, Healers, and Hustlers and Head Scratchers. Yeah, that got taken out of the mix.
In the Australian Survivor 24 player season
yeah,
version.
Exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of Head Scratchers.
Yeah.
But
winners versus fallen angels or winners versus elites. Just like people who are decisively great, proven great at Survivor.
Right. People that are like, right there, and you could bring back like a Wentworth or David Wright.
Yeah.
And you could fill that up and then, you know, pick 10 exciting winners that you want to have come back. Because with the all winner season, we also talk about like, oh, could they get 20 winners that we want back? I think you could. Yeah. Interesting. I think that'd be fun.
It'd be fun. I would love them to save like that winner concept for a winner season. I really do think that we ought to see that at some point in the future. I'm just not interested in any All-Star Survivor, anything that isn't really firmly loaded with people who there are no head scratchers.
Okay.
And I think that that's, you know, it's for the game. It's for the health of the show. It's for the health of the game. You don't want to wind up in a situation where you want a reverse boot order, like maybe some people in this room would have desired from this season.
All right. So,
Ceri beating Tony would have, or Sierra beating Tony would have been, that would have been a story.
Yeah. That's like a Brant Steele type season.
Yeah. That'd be crazy.
All right. Beast Mode Cowboy probably got no votes.
No votes.
Okay.
No.
All right. Here is another question for you, Josh Wiggler.
Hi, this is Aubrey from Survivor Korong and Survivor Game Changers. I have a question for Josh. In the Game Changers finale, we saw kind of a controversial final four. Should they have taken Ty or should they have taken Sarah? So I want to ask Josh, if he were playing with me and Nick Majorano, who would he take in a final four to his final three, Aubrey or Nick? Looking forward to your thoughts, Josh.
Oh,
have a good one.
That's difficult.
Okay. That's a tough question.
It is a tough question because the world knows there's no love lost between myself and Nick Majorano, whereas I am a big Aubrey Bracco fan. I love Aubrey. But that would be the reason I'd probably have to cut Aubrey, right?
So I'm a little confused in this question because Aubrey is asking, so in this final four, who would you take to the final three? But who's the other person that's with you? Who's your Troyzan?
It's Troyzan.
Just you?
Look, you know,
it's Troyzan.
I feel like I should say that Troyzan and I feel like we're healing. I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, let's talk about this. I think a lot of people were concerned coming into this. There was a lot made of Troyzan on social media. And all of the block party going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The block party in full effect.
And full disclosure, you had been blocked.
I got my invitation to the block party last week.
Yes. So Josh Wiggler was at the block party.
Yeah.
I actually ran into Troy's hand the day before. I had gone and I had seen the I'd seen the finale earlier because I was rehearsing for getting ready for the CBS.
You don't
stuff.
Have to justify anything. You know, you're a professional. You do what you got to do.
And I had gone by the hotel where the survivors were staying on the way back home on Tuesday night. And I ran into Troy Zan there, and I had said to him, like, I said, you know, Troy, is everything okay? Can I give you a hug? I feel like you're upset about the whole experience, and just talking about the social media thing, and I hope Troy Zan forgives me if I'm talking out of school, but
he's not listening to this. I'm on the podcast, so.
Yes, but his take on it was like, hey, when this all started, social media, people said, hey, you got to get on social media. It's fun. It's right. fun. And he said, this isn't fun.
Yeah.
Like, all these people tell you about how terrible you are and how much you suck and you're a misogynist and you're all these things. And he's like, I don't want to see that. And, you know, I get it. And Steven has talked about these things as well. When he played a second time, how he felt like that there had been a shift in the way that people would talk on social media. Steven has said to different people on social media, like, hey, I don't care if you hate me, but could you not at reply me right. in the tweet where you're talking about how much I suck?
I completely endorse that request.
Yeah. And it makes sense. And, you know, in talking with Troy Zan, you know, we started talking about Steven Fishback and Troy Zan. They just have this bond. In the same way people thought in Survivor, Token Jeans talk about, they just looked at JT and they felt like that he was a good dude.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that there's really very little interaction between them, but they have a bond. And I think that my proximity to Steven Fishback ended up keeping me unblocked through all this. So you are too many degrees removed from Steven Fishback.
Yeah. I Troy Zan walked the carpet.
But I felt for him. I did
as well. You know, I was frustrated because what the hell did I really do? But I really understand his perspective. You know, I was having a conversation with a nice Italian family that actually happens to be from my neighborhood in Brooklyn a couple days ago, who were out here for the Survivor finale. And we started getting into the conversation of social media and how things have changed. And one person in the conversation believed that, well, the survivors should know what they're signing on.
The Majoranos?
You know, the Majoranos. Closer than you think. Like, I feel like there's something to that. Like, you know what you're signing on for. You know, this is an intense experience. You're going to be surrounded by some intense fans at times. You're going to hear things about yourself. You're going to read things about yourself that you might not like. That is all important stuff to know before you get into Survivor if you want to be a Survivor player. I think that's really, really critical to at least have an awareness of it. With that being said, I do think from like the time that even when Troy Zan played his first season, Twitter has evolved, the evolution of Twitter, you know, like social media has really changed really, really quickly. Just like, you know, the digital age, you know, things move fast.
Click, click,
yes,
click.
Yes, yes. So I think things have gotten a little hot and heavy in that regard. And I think it's more intense and people are more accessible now. And there are boundary issues in some regards, I think. But I think it's also just it's so much different from what he experienced even. And that was only 10 seasons ago, 24. So not the real time thriller.
Right.
You better go catch some fish or you're going home.
Yeah.
That's such a millennial move.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I felt for Troy Zan as well. I was very happy to have a really pleasant conversation with him. I thought
he told me, I don't know if this is off the record or not, but you are on probation for coming unblocked.
That's fine. If he doesn't, I get it. If he does, maybe we can heal the rift a little bit more, but I at least feel okay about where we left things. And I think that my interview with Troy Zan, I think, is a compelling read. I would recommend that one.
Yeah.
For sure.
So that was really nice to get to talk to him a little bit on Tuesday into Wednesday. Also, that I had never had a real life encounter with Brad Culpepper before.
Uh-huh. What did you think?
I thought Brad Culpepper was great.
Brad's really fun.
I was really intimidated coming into talking with him.
Because of the mustache and the short sleeve collared shirt and the tie, which I said to you, he looked like the sergeant in every generic action movie that just reams out his rogue detectives anytime, just like chews them out.
And I said he looks like a high school principal. Yeah. Yeah.
But mine was more hashtaggable because you get Sergeant Culpepper out of it.
Yes, that's pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah. There you go.
He hit the bell right on the target.
But
first shot.
Could we talk about this? What was this move where Brad Culpepper grew out this mustache? That when we were watching it back, I said, well, maybe this was support of Zeke.
Right.
Maybe that was his move. But then he wasn't on the red carpet. And I was like saying, did Brad skip out?
Is he skipping? Yeah.
Because Troyzan didn't come there either. Like, I think Brad and Troyzan, I think they might've skipped the red carpet. I think they're not going to do any press.
Yeah. And Zeke was out there and Andrea was out there as well.
Oh, maybe they grabbed them as like replacement.
Yeah. And just like inside baseball is, you know, the red carpets are always just the final people in the episode. Mm-hmm. That's always it. In my experience anyway, certainly in like the new way of doing things. So when they came out, I had the same exact questions like, oh God, here we go. It's just not happening.
Yeah. And then Brad Culpepper came out without the mustache.
Clean as a bell.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Again, on the first shot.
It was he then was like doing a bit with everybody where he's like, what mustache?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I've called this alternative stash. You know, he is.
Somebody else, people.
Yeah, he's saying that the mustache never happened. That we are all having a collective hallucination about the mustache.
It was like the Mandela syndrome.
Yeah, Berenstain or Berenstain.
Right. It's like, hold on, I'm pretty sure that Sinbad was a genie and Brad Culpepper had a mustache. Like, nope, never happened. Don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so we all, you know, it's like the sudden departure, like some cosmic event just happened and now we're living in the world where we all truly believed that we saw Brad Culpepper with a mustache.
Like, what a wacky thing to do, like to even think of that, like I should grow a mustache, have a mustache at the reunion show and then
shave it
after
and completely disavow it.
Yeah,
to bring back a buzzword, you know, which he buzzed his stash off, I assume. Yeah, I don't understand that at
and
all.
And it was like clean shaven. It was like there was not like that. He had just
like a baby.
Yeah.
You know, like a smooth as a baby.
I would love to get sort of the genesis of that.
I don't think that it's going to happen. I don't think that he's going to open up about this ever. I think this is going to be a lingering question for the rest of our lives. And I'm okay with that. You know, sometimes the questions are better than the answers.
Yeah. So very, very interesting.
It was great. A great just like comedic touch. Just the weirdest thing to pull a con about.
It was wacky.
I love it. It's great.
Okay. Let's take a question from Andrew C. Starting to look a little bit ahead, Josh.
Hey, Rob and Josh. Andrew C. here. Heroes versus healers versus hustlers. Please, please, please explain this. How are these mutually exclusive categories? How are these even categories that are in opposition? Who says, are you a healer or a hustler? Can Rob's PR firm explain how this is good marketing to attract new viewers? How am I going to convince my non-watcher friends to tune in based on this nonsensical title? All the other versus seasons sort of make sense at first glance, right? Why does my brain hurt? How about the following season, we do the opposite? What about villains versus injurers versus couch potatoes? Josh, you are on location. Please help.
Okay.
Oh my God. The please help like cut off really quickly.
Cut him off.
I don't know. It might be too late.
Too critical on the theme.
Too late.
Too
oh
critical
my God.
On the theme.
Well, what's your take on this? I've had months now to know about Heroes, okay. Healers, Hustlers.
I haven't said anything on the record.
Yeah, starting to like wade into this with other people's opinions. So I'm curious to get yours before I give my take.
Okay. So I will say about this, and there's been, you know, some buzz going around about the new theme of the Survivor season. And my reaction to the negative reaction is, in the words of the great Bryce Isaiah, I'm asleep. I'm so bored by your outrage of the Survivor theme. How many times have we all, oh, what a stupid blood water. Oh, millennials versus Gen X. Oh, what's this? Brains versus brawn versus beauty, white collar, no collar. Like, who cares? Who cares? It's a Survivor season. Who cares what it's called? That sure, we'll have an episode 3 where Jeff is really going to try to, you know, shoehorn like, hey, did you guys win that challenge because you were true heroes or you guys are healers and there's some healing you'll need to do back at camp. Okay.
Yeah, like when 75% of the healers break their arms in a challenge and like now it's like, how are you going to heal this? Like, right. How are we going to heal this? You right. know, that's like the kind of thing you're going to get into.
It's better than anything that they could do, which is like something like exploitive, where it would be sort of like, you know, Democrats versus Republicans.
Survivor
versus
Triple H over Survivor politics every day of the week.
Right.
Also, it's called Survivor Triple H. There's so much fun to be had there.
I am the game.
You know, that's great. That's awesome. That's fun.
Yes.
And I'm shocked that there isn't like a photoshopped Hustlers cover yet for Survivor. Like that feels like something that should have hit Reddit 3 days ago.
You mean like the Larry Flint magazine?
Yes. You know, I'm just shocked that that doesn't exist yet. Hopefully it will now.
When will Wanda drop a Jay-Z cover?
Potentially in season 35. Maybe Wanda's coming back. You never know.
You know, it's like, really, who cares? Does anybody really watch? Well, I was going to watch Survivor, but then when I heard it was Heroes versus Hustlers versus Healers, I don't even know the order.
Heroes, Healers, Hustlers.
It's like, you know, whatever. If it's a good season, it's a good cast. It's a good season.
I could not agree with
and,
you more.
And, you know, there's just
you
so
and I
much.
Drink from the same Kool-Aid, though, Rob. But I completely agree with
who
that.
Who made the Kool-Aid?
That's a good question.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, people want to like, it's just the easiest thing to get on Twitter and just like, oh, what is this? How stupid.
I've been a little frustrated about it. What I can't say anything about the season. You know, I'm under.
You're frustrated about the outrage.
Yeah. And I'm frustrated about that. I'm under embargo. So there's very little I can say. I have published a piece in The Hollywood Reporter, which is where I'm going to be covering Survivor from now on, about the six contestants that were revealed in the promo, a little tiny bit of a deeper dive into those six people. So that's at thr.com/survivor. I really liked the cast, almost to a person. I really enjoyed speaking with these people. I thought that they were really funny. I thought that they were compelling. I thought that many of them could be real great, you know, true Survivor greats, some true potential great Survivor characters. And just like sort of the outrage at headshots even is infuriating to me. Just knowing
people are outraged over headshots.
Yeah, like, you know, just like immediately like, oh, there's douche frat, bro. Like you just give it a couple of months, you know, wait to see for yourself.
Just the frustrating thing is like we've all done this so many times.
I know.
We've all complained about the Survivor theme.
All
we've
of this
all
has happened before.
Pictures.
All of this will happen again.
I'm going to root for this person because I like that picture. I'm going to root for this person. We don't know anything.
Nothing.
Like
that's part of the fun. It's part of the community. It's part of the culture. You pick apart what you can and there's not a lot to pick apart yet.
Yeah.
So I get it. I totally get it. Survivor pick apart is happening right now. Pick a little, talk a little. Cheap. I think that it's Cheapo Depot. I think that it's I understand it, but I'm with you. And I think that it has often bared out that like the confusing theme, the head scratcher theme, ultimately doesn't matter that much to the enjoyment of the season, at least for me. And we talk about this a lot. Certainly going back to Kagi-Yan of like sort of like the arbitrariness of the division of brains, brawn, and beauty. And for my money, Kagi-Yan's a top three season.
Mm-hmm.
So I would give it a rest myself. I certainly haven't started into it. Is it the best thing? Like, is it the best sounding season ever? Like, is it the greatest title for a season? Maybe not. A little bit clunky, but
what if
whatever.
They came up with the best title ever for a season? Would 30 new people watch it?
I don't think so. No.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's just another thing to say in terms of...
We're in the off season, you know?
Yeah. And I'm very much looking forward to the new player season. I think that, you know, we always want an all-star season until we get one. Cambodia was good. Heroes vs. Villains was great. But, you know, I'm very much looking forward to getting back to the new players.
Agreed.
Yes. They're just excited to be there. For the most part.
Yeah.
You have one or two lunatics on social media who are, you know, getting mad. But for the most part.
Yeah. They're thrilled to be there.
They're just happy to be mentioned.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm with you.
All right.
We share a take.
All right, Josh. Let's get into some of the social media coming out of the finale. And for the final time this season, here is Ryan Elder.
Tweets, baby tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than wearing a burlap sack to final three.
Yeah. How great was Ryan Elder? He's been doing these since Survivor San Juan del Sur.
Since the dawn of time. The Don Meehan of time. This era, Don Thomas.
This is the dawn of time.
Of time.
Yes. Okay. We start
Brad
off.
Kind of looked like Link.
Link?
Yeah, from like The Legend of Zelda. It was like the Link tunic.
Hmm. I have to take. The burlap yes. sack, not the mustache.
No, not like, the stash.
Like,
No. I don't know. I know that Breath of the Wild is very customizable, at least in terms of attire, but I don't know if they let you put facial hair on Link.
Okay. Here is Tony Vlachos, who I did not get to see. Did you have any encounter with Tony?
None, and that made me sad.
Yeah, it made me sad too. He said, congrats at Sarah Lucina. You played an amazing game and deserve the win. So glad to be part, in parentheses, small in a season that you won. Hashtag cops are us.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Makes me happy. You know, I'm happy about the Sarah win because of the Tony factor in a big way. Like, that's a big contributing factor in me being really good with what happened with the ultimate result of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had Randy Bailey, who tweeted right before the reunion, enough already with the Survivor Game Changers. Let's hear from Cochran, Sia, and Blossom at the reunion show.
I believe Sia was in the building, but she didn't cause any ruckus.
Yeah, nobody was earning of the Sia fan favorite award.
No, I guess Ty was not hustling this season. You know, he could have done a little bit better on that front.
Yeah. Here is Boston Rob that he tweeted. Love the final tribal at Survivor CBS, always reinventing itself to keep itself fresh. That's why it's the best.
What do you think? Would Boston Rob
reinventing how this game is played?
If that final tribal format exists in Survivor All-Stars, how does Boston Rob do there? Is he able to damage control any of that, or is he too much of a hothead back then? Hothead was another H tribe that was abandoned.
Right, right. He wasn't a hothead during the All-Stars finale. He was like sad. Like, he tried to be, like, I don't know if he really was sad or if he was, and I feel like that, and maybe I'm imagining this, but I feel like that we've talked about this on the podcast in our conversations where he said that he was like upset that he let everybody sort of like guilt him into being sad. He was sort of like had like his head like hung low. And so,
but if he can shoot back and if he can really drill down into points rather than into just like weathering the questions from people,
I think adult Boston Rob might have been able
quantum to leap him back there with that format and Survivor All-Stars.
You know, 27 year old.
Let's get out of this. Let's get out of this. This is such a tangent. No one needs this. This is fine. Yeah, you know, we'll talk about this at some point in the future, but probably not.
Do some time traveling. Brett LaBelle says, Well, at Ham 0481, did a cop just outwit, outplay, outlast a scumbag defense attorney?
Wow. Oh, my God. Drag him.
Wow.
Brat, yeah.
I saw Chris Hammonds last night.
Yeah, I saw him, too. I didn't get to talk to him, but I knew he was out there. He's such a big guy.
Yeah. No, he's big.
Yeah.
Darnell Hamilton, King Darnell, _32, says, healers? Like, seriously? WTF is this Skyrim? That's an original take though. I haven't heard is this Skyrim?
Yeah. I don't know. Paladins versus Rangers versus clerics.
Why did Shane Powers tweet out, can anyone make a meme of Jeff Probst's face on Fonzie's body after he jumps the shark? Was he just still mad about the Suri going home?
I think that he's upset that Jeff Varner mispronounced the name of his new book, Surviving Shane.
Surviving Shane?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Parvati Shallow said, I'm digging this rapid fire.
Rapid fire?
Yes. What was she talking about? They didn't even go to fire making.
Wow.
Okay.
Do you think that there was any reason for Sarah to make Troyzan do fire? I don't think so, right? You know, Ty really wanted her to do that.
No, get out. I mean, why get was she going to go to fire? Like, I was such a, like, I was like, watching
if it's,
the
if
episode.
It's Brad and she needs to weaken Brad, maybe that's one thing, but you don't need to beat Troyzan down.
Yeah, it's like, why do you need to knock Troyzan
no, you don't
out
need
of
to
the
do
final
that. You
three
don't need
here?
To do that. He's taking enough heat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Russell Hance, the famous podcaster that he's going along and tweeting.
You know, that first one is a compelling listen. I haven't listened past the first, but. You know.
Oh, keep going.
Okay.
Keep binging.
Okay.
Keep
How many binging. Are there now?
I think there's two.
Okay.
There's two.
I kind of enjoyed that first, though, I'll be honest.
Okay.
Russell, I am a snowflake.
Yes.
What are you going to do?
Russell Hans, I forgot Laura's daughter even play.
Taking shots at the Moritz any way he can.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great.
Although Russell does have a fair point.
Why can't they just do a Survivor? The name is a certain place like they used to.
Uh-huh. So Survivor Fiji, Survivor Fiji 2, Survivor Fiji 3.
Yeah.
Survivor Fiji Law.
Fiji Law. I like that. The good good hashtag, potentially. Okay, let's
saw
see.
Saw Fiji last night, I will say.
Yes.
Had a great conversation.
Great conversation. Okay. Say Jervis Peterson, he was not a fan of the mustache. He said, Brad, your mustache is killing me.
Well, maybe he means it as like, oh, that's great comedy. Like this whole bit, like I totally get it and I'm picking up what you're putting down. Maybe he was really into it. Maybe you're killing it. You're killing me is more like an endorsement of the gag.
Yes. Okay. I mean, those are pretty much the highlights. Yeah.
Dark Knight on Twitter, huh? For
yeah.
The finale.
Whitney Duncan, a friend of the podcast, she tweeted, I like this final three.
Uh-huh. That's a great take.
Yeah.
Of course, that would be Whitney Duncan's take. Said, the only person in the world who said that. With all due respect.
Yes, with all due respect. Yeah, watch it, Josh
sorry.
Wiggler.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Block,
I know. I'm on
block.
Probation. I'm on probation.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Josh, what else do we have to talk about? I mean, we talked about Sarah. We talked about Brad's moves.
Yes.
The new format.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like, you know, future subsequent podcasts, I'm sure you're going to talk to some of these people, right? Like, who are the gets? Who do you want to get from Game Changers on the podcast to really drill into Game Changers?
You know what? It's the summer. I feel like
open
that-
season.
Yeah, I'm open to just about anybody.
Yeah,
just about anybody. I think we could, you know, really get into because we could talk about their previous season. I think there's a lot of meat there to get
collect.
To. Yeah, we don't have to necessarily because I feel like there was so much we didn't see this season. We're going to be having Aubrey in soon.
That's awesome.
To kick off the post season lineup. So
which is great because we didn't get to hear from her after Koran.
Right. So I think that that'll be a fun one, and we'll talk to more people along the way.
I think Ty would be really fun.
Sure. There's a lot
basically,
of people.
Yeah, almost everybody from this cast.
Just about everybody from this season. Josh, in making my off-season schedule, are you really going to do Naked Survivor Countdown?
No.
No, okay.
No, I
won't. All right, well, then, okay. That, would you mind if we give that to somebody
yes,
else?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, that's fine. All right, so a lot of stuff coming up. What else are you working on these days, Josh?
Oh, my God. I guess I don't have to say it's a secret. Like, I'm going to be working on the season 35 preseason stuff mm-hmm. this summer. That's going to be a heavy, heavy undertaking. A lot of work. But I think if I can pull it off the way I want to, I think it's going to be really fun. I love doing the preseason stuff, and I've got some fun ideas for this one. So I'm going to be knee-deep in that pretty soon. I'm going to try to take, like, a week off of Survivor first.
Yeah. Are you a hero, a hustler?
I asked myself this question.
Yes, what are you?
I think I'm, I guess I got to be a hustler, right? I was a freelancer for a long time.
Yes, and then we'll start the debate. What am I?
You're also a hustler, though you heal people with your
yes.
And to many, you are a hero. You know,
what is that? So,
it's so hard. You know, like how do you just like categorize this?
Yeah. Stuff? Well, I'll say that I'm a hustler until Eliza just shouts out a know-it-all this fall. You're not a hustler.
Yeah, that's definitely where we're going with that. So yeah, working on that. Game of Thrones is right around the corner, so I'm gonna be eyeballs deep in that pretty mm-hmm. soon. Lots of stuff at THR. I'm really happy today. Actually, Rob was my my final day with Parade.
Yes,
which was actually kind of I haven't had like time to like really be sad about it, but I really loved working with those guys, and I'm really psyched to see what Mike Bloom does over there. Mike Bloom officially is taking on the Survivor beat for Parade magazine. I'm really really hyped about that. Cool to get him into the mix of this thing. I think that's been a long time coming. So excited to see where he takes that. Parade.com/survivor is now Mike Bloom's territory. So
okay.
Give that man some click, click, clicks.
Yes. So go on over in Mike Bloom out.
Josh Wiggler.
Yes. Okay. All right. All good stuff. We've got some fun off-season podcasts coming up as well next week. I'll talk to David Bloomberg about why Sarah won, why everybody else lost this season. So be on the lookout for that. Plus News AF. So don't go anywhere. Rob has a website.com/iTunes to subscribe. Is there anything else that we didn't cover?
Hashtag? No.
Hashtag. What is it?
What did we... Did you write some stuff down?
Like
we spat out a few hashtags over the
course
of the season.
We certainly
Maybe it's
did.
Just like a dealer's choice or it's a user's choice. You can just tweet the ones you liked.
Okay. Fair enough. Good stuff, Josh. It was a pleasure going through this season with you between the Wiggle Rooms and all the podcasts that we did.
An honor.
We started way back. And at Jervis.
Yes.
We started way back, what was it, in... What month is it?
Currently?
Yeah, what month is
we're,
it?
We're May, in May, about to kiss June.
Right. It was, what, February 8th that we sat here and we went to CBS and we were with Hannah.
That's
and
right.
We talked about the preview for
oh
the
my
season.
Oh, God. So much has happened here. I almost forgot about that.
Yes. Yes. Well, every day feels longer.
Oh, God.
Yes. Yeah, just ask Ozzy. And so we have spent many, many weeks getting here, and what a ride it's been.
Yeah.
So thanks for all the support all season long. We greatly appreciate it. You can let us know what you think on robhasawebsite.com. And of course, follow Josh on Twitter @RoundHoward. I'm @RobSestrino. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.